Okay, everyone, settle down. We've got a lot of stuff to get through in this week's Death Cult meeting. Take a seat and let's get started. All right, first, we have some announcements. The Altar Guild is looking for some new volunteers to help out, but we could definitely use some help in disposing of the dead bodies on the altars after worship, and that blood doesn't wash itself, oh no. Nobody wants a sticky altar. Also, the bake sale was a huge success, and we would like to thank all you chefs out there for donating your various death-themed sweets. Dolores, those tombstone cupcakes were to die for. Now, on to the matter at hand. Attendance is down, and we aren't seeing a lot of new recruits into our death cult. I want to hear some ideas on how we can get those numbers up. Don't be shy. Let's get this conversation going.
Hi. Yes. Well, I have an idea on why numbers might be down, but I don't know that you're going to like it.
Hey, no bad ideas here. The Vestibule of Eternal Torment, in honor of She Who Would See the End of Life, is a safe place.
Okay, so you know how the gods are undebatably real and provide constant proof of their existence?
Of course. I don't think I could take another sermon from the High Priest without the help of a couple dark miracles, am I right?
Right, yeah. And you know how there's the temple to Alustra, the goddess of prosperity and unlimited orgasms in town?
Ugh, yes. Don't get me started.
Well, it's just, I think people, you know, presented with the option of worshiping a deity that promises bliss and fulfillment upon death is maybe going to be a bit more popular than the one that promises an eternity of pain for their worshippers.
Sure, sure. That whole never-ending joy and love thing might be popular with the kids these days, but it's like that old saying goes, if you're not an Illustrin at 25, you have no heart. If you are not a member of a death cult at 35, you will have your heart sacrificed to the Black Depths.
I was thinking maybe we could change up the image a bit, you know? If I try to tell my neighbor how great it is murdering folks and pledging my existence to an uncaring goddess that would like nothing more than to snuff out my existence, he's liable to think I'm nuts. Or call the town guard, seeing as we are considered to be enemies of reality, to be rooted out whenever we are found.
I like to think that just makes us more sympathetic. Everyone likes an underdog.
How about we not lead with the whole death thing? Like, maybe we let potential recruits know about all the good work we do and just kind of ease them into the whole ceremony of flaying thing. How about this? We can try setting up a newcomer service. We can have our traditional skinning and organ devouring of a terrified sacrifice at 9, but then at 11, we can have Jim set up his guitar, and we can rock out our message about how cool and awesome it is to receive the dark blessings of her infernal presence.
You know, you just might be onto something there. I think this is going to be one of the best meetings yet. Okay, next topic on the agenda. Should we raise the budget for black robes or make it BYOBR? Welcome to Afterthought, the podcast companion to System Mastery, where I, Jeff, and my partner John answer questions and talk about whatever the hell we want once every other week, basically whenever it is that we can't read any more RPGs. Even that's not true. We're just feverishly reading another one.
Feverishly.
I'm pretty feverish.
We're both sick as hell.
I'm not feverish. I certainly am sore from couch moving.
Yeah, all that couch surfing I've been doing.
Man. Don't you make prophecies.
It's coming true. Oh, no. I shouldn't have said I wished I was big.
Yeah, it didn't work out for you at all.
I used to be so svelte.
You know what's sad is when you're older than Tom Hanks was in Big?
Yeah.
Because I've hit that point quite a while ago, and I'm like,
And you realize, man, I should have just gone into a toy company and told them they're idiots and then...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I should have been like, no one wants to play with a Transformer that turns into a building. And they could be like, no, actually, no one plays with Transformers at all. We just make them and they buy them in the package and pretend that they are gaining in value. That's That's how this works. That's the whole racket.
That's the way this works now.
We don't even really put toys in the boxes anymore. The whole thing's a scam. There's just a printed out picture.
It's all smoke and mirrors.
All the way down. So it doesn't matter if we release one that's a fucking building. You hack, get out. What do you mean you have a third grade education? This is nonsense. Now go have terrible sex with an 80s woman and then wish yourself back into being a kid.
Just make this as awkward as possible for everyone.
I really wanted to see that sex scene where he's just like poking at her vagina going, wait, what?
What?
I thought this was more like just a hairy area.
A hairia.
All right. So John, welcome to the Afterthoughts. We reviewed X-Crawl last week, specifically the D20 version, as we have come to learn from a little research after the fact, only after the fact.
Yeah.
There's a lot of versions of X-Crawl out there. There's a Pathfinder version that's out there right now. That's the new one. And this had also been released at one time for Hero System.
Yep. And the one that we got, the old edition that we have, the very first one, is far more just like a little veneer over it, and mostly it's just setting material. I've seen that most of the other ones are like, here's an actual like feat tree that you've got for things and mm-hmm. a bunch more classes and stuff like that, whereas this is just the bare minimum of work.
Yeah, the book's about 200 pages long, and the part where the setting ends and it starts giving you new rules is like page 160.
Yeah, and then when it stops giving you new rules, it's like page 170.
Yeah, back to the story. Anyway, Reagan, the Emperor of North America. Here we go again.
Yeah, it's weird, but...
So we've had a couple people email us in the time since we reviewed it to let us know that the setting sounds awesome and to ask for recommendations as to what game system it should be played in. And the funny thing is, I don't think that matters very much. I feel like there's not much you need to do to fix it so it's playable. The whole thing you really want to take from that game is the core concept.
Oh, yeah. Technically anything that has a decent enough system for combat and also it allows you to do some mugging for the camera, like both of those, that's fine. It doesn't matter what you're playing in. As long as you can go do a dungeon crawl, I would actually say doing it in like a Pathfinder or D&D or whatever is probably one of the better things to do. Because, I mean, a lot of times when people are like, how do I take this stupid thing that sucks and put it into something better? And it's always like, I don't know, fate powered by the apocalypse. But with this, I would say actually do it in
older
the old
systems,
style
yeah.
system and then have it be like, yeah, my character has all these ridiculous old bullshit, and then fold that into the flavor of the setting.
Yeah, it's part of it. You want that old school flavor when you're playing this. I would do this in an old D&D. I would even keep it in second edition and just fix the it was third edition. You could keep it in third edition perfectly fine and just fix the mechanics.
Oh, yeah.
Just make a little more of a concerted effort to have the classes reflect the world that's surrounding them.
Yeah, don't be so restrictive on like, yeah, barbarians just don't exist and druids either. And
yeah.
In fact, no one but like fighters and wizards and rogues. That's it.
And also, we feel here at the X-Crawl Industries that wizards aren't powerful enough, so here's several buffs.
Yeah. No, it's a weird thing that they did with that.
Yeah, well, you know, like I'm saying, there's an easy fix for it. It's not a hard game to repair. The core concept is fantastic. I could see the whole modern Rome America thing is working. It just felt like it was too much in that book.
Yeah, well, honestly, that much setting information is mostly going to be there if it was like, oh, here's something you can really like latch onto and play with in setting. But if your entire goal is to be like, I'm going to be a rad, like extreme sports X-Crawlsman, and that's it.
Well,
the fact that there's all of this shenanigans going on in the world, you're like, oh, that doesn't matter. I don't really care if Emperor Reagan is being like weird and like mystically phone tapping people. Because that's not a thing my X-Crawl dude is going to worry about.
But you know, it's funny because the game we did right before X-Crawl was that The Babylon Project. And I'm sorry, I know that that's nebulous.
Hold on, which one?
I'm sorry, I'm talking about The Babylon Project, the role-playing game set in the Babylon 5 universe, the hit television show from J. Michael Straczynski.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm trying to. That's probably wrong. I'm not looking at it right now, and it's been a few weeks.
It's been a while.
It's been quite a while since we reviewed the Babylon Project, the role playing game set in the Babylon 5 universe, the television series by J. Michael Straczynski. So as I was saying, That game, I complained about how it was trying to force you down one narrow path of what you could do in the universe. I was like, the book keeps telling us, oh, only play as humans and only play during this time period. And be careful if you try and let anyone be psychic, because that'll probably backfire on you. But and then in this game, I'm like, how come they keep all the prestige classes have nothing to do with the core concept? So there's a balance to be struck. I appreciate X-Crawl for saying, hey, maybe you don't want to play as dungeon runners. Maybe you want to play as the supply chain that finds bugbears and puts them in there. That's sort of a neat concept. I feel like it's better reserved for another book, though.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to do... The only thing that actually makes sense for me is the Trapper one. Because mm-hmm. at that point, if you're like, I want to engage in the setting, but I'm still technically playing D&D, so it's not like I can run around in this setting as something that isn't a D&D character.
Yeah.
But if you're doing the Trappers, then you can be like, okay, instead of doing the X-Crawl stuff, we're trying to take down monsters without killing them or convince them to come join X-Crawl, which means you can have room for like, oh yeah, we took a bard with us because he's awesome at talking to dudes and being like, hey, random squad of orcs, will you guys come join our X-Crawl thing?
Wow, you just made a mistake when you could just take a wizard. Just be like, yeah, I'm the persuader on this team. Anyway, charm monster, let's go. Come on.
Well, yeah, but then that'll wear off, and then they're like, well, fuck you. We're just going to kill everyone.
I guess that's true.
You want them to sign contract and really be into it.
Yeah, that is true. You got me there. So a bard that's glibly talking people to be into being on the team would be fantastic. And I think there's room for a dungeon judge game where every player plays it. I think dungeon judge would work best as one of those video games. Could you imagine that? Like,
oh, yeah, it's like the dungeon keeper.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine how much fun that would be. Dungeon judge the game where you have to create creative dungeons for players to run around in and you have to try and trap and kill them. It'd be like Boss Monster.
I was going to say, it is basically Dungeon Keeper meets Boss Monster.
Yeah, and I feel like there's room for that. I don't think the room for it is a PC in a dungeon crawl game, though.
No, I haven't played it, but I think Dungeon Lords might be close to that. It's a board game.
All right, well, there you go. So that's a genre that people have dabbled in that I feel like this game could have pushed into that direction. Although, man, using third edition rules to write a dungeon master simulator would be a weird feat indeed.
It would be super weird.
Yeah. So anyway, like I was saying, I think that game's got a lot of potential. It just didn't quite hit it in that edition. Maybe the Pathfinder. I've heard the Pathfinder game has 6 unique classes to the dungeon world.
The
X-Crawl experience. So maybe that would be kind of neat. I mean, given that Athlete was awful.
Oh, that is just the most garbage, bare minimum effort class.
Yeah, there's nothing going on with the Athlete. So I haven't really looked into what the Pathfinder version has, but it's got 6 classes in it that are unique to dungeon crawl experience.
Oh, yeah, it's baseballsman and footballer and...
Well, you got dungeon lighting technician.
Key grip.
The Reagan toady.
Cinematographer.
Best boy.
Caterer.
Yeah.
Craft service.
Makeup artist. That's all these great new classes that you don't need to take into the dungeon. They all have a D4 hit points and no base attack bonus.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I would say I like it enough that basically if you wanted to play it, I would do one of the systems that is based around dungeon crawling to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And then make it so that all of your high-flying shenanigans is actual shenanigans. All the stupid crap that PCs normally get up to when they're like, all right, I've got a stupid idea. And then you as the DM normally look at them and go, oh, God, what dumb thing are you going to try and do now? But now, when your PCs tell you that, you can just be like, all right, great, fucking do it. Let's see how the crowd reacts.
Triple black backflip where you catch the passing jet fighter, huh? That's not just ridiculous and out of the theme.
Sure. Fuck it.
Yeah, let's do it. I would say that my vote for what game system I would play it in is probably Gamma World. The 7th edition Gamma World. Okay. I feel like it would be perfect. Not only would it be perfect, but even if it wasn't something you wanted to do long term, a one day session where you happen upon an irradiated like wasteland arena where people are playing X-Crawl would be awesome.
It's just weird X-Crawl games set in the Gamma World setting. Would be interesting, yes.
Oh, yeah. Imagine playing Beyond X-Crawl Dome.
Yeah, you show up at some town and you're like, oh, if you want to find our boss and get whatever MacGuffin you're looking for, you need to compete in the X-Crawl.
DJ Tina Turner will escort you through hell. Come on, that would be amazing.
Oh, man. DJ Master Blaster all up in there.
Yeah, DJ Master Blaster. DJ Humongous.
He is the humongous, the DJ humongous.
Oh my God. Oh, I think we just sold How to Play That Game.
It's Mad Max Gamma World X Crawl.
That's that right there. I think we just figured it out. Look, people at Hand in Mouth Panda Stuff Games, if you're listening, that's what you need to do. Drop all the Emperor Reagan nonsense, move it forward a couple of years into the apocalypse, get some shoulder pads made out of old car tires, and you are donezo. You gotta change your aesthetic from old dungeons to like stuff made out of chain link fence and sand, and you are good to go.
Yeah, that would be perfection.
Oh my gosh, DJ Immortan Joe.
Oh yeah.
Do not become addicted to healing potions, for you will resent their absence.
Oh man, he would totally run a death race. That's what you would need to do with that game.
Yeah.
With DJ Immortan Joe, instead of your standard X crawl, he'd be like, "All right, it's death race time. Everyone gets their own buggy."
Yeah, you
and
have
it would
that.
Be like wacky races, but with a death count.
Yeah, you have that for the first room, and then in the second room, it's a fight on the back of a war wagon. Or whatever we call the war rig or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you make that thing out of squares because Gamma World 70 uses 4th edition square system.
You get that tanker on the and everyone going on the back there.
Yeah, they're fighting on the back of the tanker.
All movement powers being super important.
Yeah, one person can get inside the turret that's on the very back of it and wheel it around to try and blast dudes off the top.
Meanwhile, you got to dodge guys throwing like spear bombs at you.
Oh, yeah. Every couple of turns, like a dude on a pole will come swooping in and do an attack in the squares adjacent to him.
Oh, God damn. Why am I not playing that right now? Let's turn this stupid bullshit off and play that.
Man, I think we just figured out how to make X-Crawl rad.
Well, sir.
Okay.
Be on the lookout for our live play of that.
Oh, my gosh. That is such a great idea. Do you want to answer some questions from listeners and not just keep blowing each other over how great our idea was?
Well...
Maybe just a little more. We're visionaries, John.
A little more blowing of each other.
True visionaries. You are going to take this train to the top.
Well, man, after moving that couch today, my hands are a little tired. I think I should probably stop jerking myself off here.
Yeah, I got a new couch today, folks. It's the kind of couch that has recliners built into it.
So it's just metal and heavy?
It just weighs like 3,000 pounds. It was the only joy, the rest period of today, was moving the old couch out.
Oh, yeah. That thing was just nothing.
It was like trying to hold up a balloon after holding it. It was like, oh, let's just take this out. Oh, I threw it into the ceiling on accident.
Whoop. I'll just one hand this one into the truck, and away we go.
There we are. All right, so let's get to some questions from listeners.
Questions from listeners.
All right, so our first question of the day comes to us from a Ted Cheddar.
One Ted Cheddar.
His name's like Nicky Cheese or something. Is that the same guy? Or are we talking about two people?
No,
here?
That's two different people.
Okay, good. Nicky Cheese. This is Ted Cheddar.
Ted Cheddar.
Ted Cheddar.
So, big so, jaw on so, that guy.
So, yeah, Ted Zadar sent us this question. B-movie legend Ted Zadar.
Big fan of the show. His ghost has sent us questions.
And changed his name from Robert to Ted.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the afterlife, he goes from Robert to Robbie to Teddy to Ted.
There's just a lot of Roberts in limbo.
There's a lot of Zadars in there.
Guys, I'm Robert Zadar.
Oh, which
I'm
also, one?
I'm also Robert Zadar. You Robert Zadar from Encino, California? just call me by my middle name, Ted. All right, so Ted Cheddar asks, Ogre Magi, underused and underappreciated, how can we, as a podcast and Australian guy who listens to it, promote Ogre Magi into the pantheon of cool D&D monsters? Well, let's start by defining what the traditional Ogre Mage was back in old D&D.
Well, I think the problem with Ogre Mage back then is they got spell lists.
Mm-hmm.
And spell-like powers and a whole bunch of nonsense. And anytime you had any monster that was like, oh, I get access to wizard spells, you're like, oh, this is going
to
suck.
Yeah, they make the fight slow down a lot. I think the other thing about ogre mages is that they're not connected to ogres. They're not like every town of ogres will have an ogre mage. Ogre mages were basically D&D in the 1970s going, oh, what's this oni? We can't just say oni in here. People are going to think that's Japanese nonsense. Because that's what they are. They're just oni with a Americanized name.
Well, I mean, if you take the, if you go World of Warcraft type Ogre Magi,
the double headed,
the double head thing, I'm like, that's fine. You can do that if you do something interesting with them.
Yeah, I think that might actually be the right place to start, is to look to World of Warcraft for your starting inspiration. Cho'Gall's rad.
Yeah.
I mean, any of those ogre magi give you an interesting hook right off the bat.
Yeah, because they're going to be yelling at each other all the way through the fight.
Yeah, and it lets you have things like, okay, you know, they try to wrestle control of who's in charge.
Yeah.
So even if they do have spells and it's kind of overpowered, maybe the fighter head takes control, then it just tries to swing at you.
Or you can also play them in such a way that they're a great solo for a party at that point, because they get two sets of actions.
Yeah, you got one fighter head and one caster head, and they're doing different things for either way.
And they're always doing stuff, so...
And they always get you.
But so instead of the standard monster problem of being like, all right, you four players, you go. My turn, I swing once.
Okay, well,
back around the loop we go.
Yeah, the I think the thing with the ogre mage is it's basically if you don't do something like that, give them some weird hook, then all it is just I have applied a class to a different race.
Right.
And be like, oh, why aren't goblin shaman more prevalent? You're like, because it's just a class for one of the races.
So let's see. The way to make an ogre magi special then, in our actual answer, is I'm going to say embrace the Japanese aspect of them. Give them some katanas. Put in a ninja one. Ninja ogre mage casting ninja magic and being way too big to hide, but he's trying anyway. So that's step one. Step two is to buff them up with an extra head.
Step two for me is give some interesting ideas for them. You can give them the two heads or make them weird in some way.
Mm-hmm.
To make them distinct from just an ogre that can cast spells.
Yeah, and then still give them ogres under their command. They should be badass.
Give them ogres under their trench coat.
Yeah, so that's our
solution.
An
ogre magi is three ogres on top of each other.
It's three ogres with two heads each on top of each other under a Japanese-style trench coat casting spells.
Yes.
There we go. That'll get them onto the pantheon.
Glorious Nippon steel.
I think they were the biggest thing you could play as in the old second edition D&D Book of Humanoids. And they were ridiculously good in that as well.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, because they got ogre powers and spells.
Yeah, you got to be huge and cast spells. That's great.
Yeah, so that pretty much did the job for them. Although, honestly, that book had a terrible run for new races and revitalizing them in any way. No one's like, man, I can't wait to play a mongrel man or a Wemmick or what else we got in here? An Alagi.
Ooh.
John, if you even tell me what a loggy is, I will give you a dollar.
Oh, sweet. I think it's a dog. It's a dog man.
Nah, it's kind of a Yeti thing.
Yeah, well, that's what a dog man is, kind of a Yeti thing.
You just want a dollar.
I do want a dollar. Also a dog.
You just got dogs on the brain.
I got that dog brain, yo.
I know. You really need to get yourself a dog. All right, maybe we need a show dog.
Get that show dog.
Yeah, all right. So let's move on. Sir Phobo says, what are some ways to encourage players reluctant to give their characters story hooks to include them, especially when playing an RPG that doesn't have a mechanical benefit for adding hooks?
Ask questions.
Yeah, lots of questions. Basically, here's the thing. People have learned that hooks are occasionally bad, and so they start to avoid them. When they're like, oh, my character is married happily. I kill your wife. So the first thing you need to do is defeat that sense that hooks are a bad thing that the DM's going to use to get you.
Yeah, I mean, if your players aren't like actively doing that where they're going like, oh, I just need to not have anything, and they're just not providing them because they aren't thinking of providing them, then all you need to do is just, you know, ask them a few questions of like, oh, so, you know, do you have any family? Where did you grow up? You know, ask them about friends as a kid. What was their favorite thing that they did, whatever. Give them, just ask a few questions until you get to a point where you're like, all right, there's an idea there that I can hook onto.
So here's the thing. John, when was the last time you played in a role-playing game where a character had a brother or a sister that wasn't another one of the PCs and also did not turn out to be evil?
My characters all the time.
Yeah, but do they end up being NPCs? Like, do you get to have them come into the game and be a part of it?
Actually, no. My exalted monk, Verdance, back in the day, had an entire family on the Blessed Isle that he just wasn't in contact with because they were on the Blessed Isle and he was not.
Right. I feel like that's one of the more interesting things you could do with a hook is to be like, all right, my character has a brother. And before you say, oh, yeah, great, during Adventure 3, he'll show up as the dark evil paladin. How about this? He's basically Racer X. I think he's dead, but he keeps showing up to help me.
Or how about this? I've got a brother. He's kind of a chode-linger.
I've got a crappy brother. He thinks Korn is an okay band to listen to.
Look, I've got a brother. He's real into nu metal.
I've just got a crappy brother. He won't try and kill us, but he will show up and ask for money to pay off his car stereo loans.
And he is trying to pay off his car stereo loans by selling car stereos out of the back of his car.
Also, he doesn't even have a car.
He's renting a car.
He just has
to sell stereos out of the back of.
He just has car stereo parts. He's like, guys, you don't understand. This woofer had a chain link grate. Also, it's blue anodized.
Yeah.
Rockford Fosgate's going to throw me in the slammer, man. You got to help me.
That's how you do it. That's how you get a hook.
That's a hook right there. You have a dirtbag brother.
Yeah. Some kind of dirtbag.
That didn't go where I was expecting it at all.
It never does.
All right. Okay. If you had the opportunity to buy any mainstream professional sports team in the U.S. or Canada, what team would it be and why? And John, hard mode. You can't pick a team that you are a fan of. That's not going to be a problem for John. Or if you don't like any sports team, you can't pick one that plays in California or a state or province you grew up in.
Okay, so no California teams.
Mm-hmm.
No place I grew up in.
Okay.
Let's see. I will go ahead and take the Yankees because I like
money. Yeah,
I like cash. I like cash money.
See, it's funny because my initial thought was to say I'm going to take the Patriots because I want to be known as the hero that disbanded them.
Lol. I almost said that for the Cowboys.
Yeah, I know. And I was going to say it for the Raiders at first, but I'll have to wait a year or two until they're the Vegas Raiders.
Oh, them Vegas Raiders.
Yeah. For now, they're still in Oakland, so I can't use them for the hard mode. But I'm going to be – I'd love to be known as the man who disbanded the Patriots. First of all, I'm never going to go to New England again, and that's okay. They put way too much mayonnaise on their lobster. But I will be world famous as the guy who was like, man, fuck this team. They just mess up the NFL too much.
Oh, man. If I was able to pick anything, though, I would take the Chargers and then just move them to the shittiest place possible.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, if we're off the hard mode, then the Chargers are already going to some crap-ass convention center.
Oh, yeah, I'm gonna take them. They're going to be like the Oklahoma City Chargers.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing with them.
Here's my plan. I want the Chargers, and I want the Chargers' job in life to not play football, but rather make sure that Alex Spanos and Dean Spanos spend the rest of their lives as door-to-door salesmen that have to wear a barrel that's attached by straps. That would be a dream for me.
There you go.
So that's us. That's us being mad at our stupid ex-football team.
Just take them and be like, here, you play in North Dakota now. Get out.
You guys have to play Pee Wee Football League, and you have to let them win.
You have to.
You have to.
It's in your contract.
And if you don't, then I've got a radio control that makes your pants fall down while you're running.
Well,
I'm going to take the Chargers and make them the Washington General equivalent in a new Harlem Globetrotters football game.
Yeah, what I'm doing is I'm taking them. They're the North Dakota team.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a South Dakota team, make them the heroes of this, and they're going to play each other exclusively.
The South Dakota Globetrotters, we'll call them. We'd call them a city from South Dakota, but come on.
Who knows? All I can think of is like Mount Rushmore.
I mean, Harlem's not even. It's a neighborhood in a city.
Yeah.
That's how many people there are in New York. South Dakota's got like 50 people. And is it the one with the mountains?
Yeah. Yes. South Dakota's the one with Rushmore.
Rushmore. North Dakota has rocks and oil.
They've got oil and that's
the
about
pipe.
It.
I think they have that pipeline that everyone...
That pipe.
The pipeline that...
They keep laying that pipe just like me.
Well, no, now they've stopped laying that pipe. But who knows how long that'll last. All right. So let's see here. Let's move on to a question from Bran McBorn. I'm sorry, Bran McMorn.
What, huh? Brian McLemore?
Brian McLemore says, hey, boners, what are your thoughts on when a DM should call for a skill check? I think the old Ken, Robin, Greg dictum of, is that Ken Height, Robin Laws, and Greg Stolze then, I guess?
Sure, why not?
I don't listen to Ken and Robin talk about stuff. I really probably ought to, seeing as how much I love feng shui, but man, those names are tricky for me there. Dictum of only roll when failure is interesting and doesn't break the story is a solid guide. But you all are contrarians. Thanks, Bran McMorn. But not the white supremacist Twitter, Bran McMorn. That guy sucks.
Yeah, that guy does suck.
I'll take your word for it.
Sure, why not?
He's a white supremacist. He probably sucks.
Yep, I'm going to assume so.
I assume he's going to have one of those haircuts that the news agencies are all tutting over like he's a sexy football player.
I'm sure he is an excellent memesman.
Yeah. He's all like, I hate Jews and I think we should kill the black people, but check out my wicked sweet undercut. Right?
Also, look at this Pepe.
Look that at this. I just found. When I say go, be ready to throw.
You saying you want me to throw a Pepe?
Yes.
Okay.
Go.
But it's a very rare Pepe. Remember when that was all Pepe was?
Remember?
When it was just pictures of Pepe and people were talking about how rare the Pepes were?
Do you remember that halcyon day?
Remember the halcyon days when your dad didn't know what Pepe is?
Do you remember? Pepperidge Farm does.
Pepperidge Farm remembers a special time when Pepes were just frogs on the internet that didn't matter.
Pepe Farm remembers.
All right.
God, what the hell was this question?
When should a DM call for a skill check? And Greg, Ken, and Robin are right. It's when things are interesting. It would be interesting to have a skill check.
Well, yeah. Never do it for a binary unless the binary does something interesting. Because it's the old go-to of, like, you try to find out information to forward the plot. I fail. All right, well, just keep rolling until you say you succeed, because that's how this happens.
The only corollary I'd add to it is, don't make people roll the same skill check twice in a row.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have to. They should just be continuing to succeed as they move along. Every time I see people like, okay, to approach the tower under without being noticed by the guards, you'll have to make 5 successive stealth checks.
Great.
Great. So 5 chances to fail instead of just one. That's
good. Great.
How's the invisibility spell work again?
Yeah. That is the problem with that, is you've got to make one check for things like that, and if you're going to do multiple checks, have it be different skills or different areas. And again, just go with the fail forward. You know, if you're trying to find information to move the plot along and you fail, you find the information, but it tips someone off and some shenanigans happens. You know, do that.
Can I also say one of my favorite things about when having players make skill checks is to let the players put forward what skill they would like to roll and why, as opposed to calling for checks.
Yes.
I don't like saying, all right, everybody, let's all make a move silently check. I like saying, everybody, what check would you like to make? Because then you get more inventive usage.
Right. Diplomacy. I'm going to ask the darkness politely to surround me. Yes.
Sure, let them roll that. That'll be fun.
Sure.
The band, the darkness, shows up and surrounds you.
No one can see you.
Yeah, but everyone's watching them because they're magnetic. Have you seen them? First of all, they are the ugliest fuckers, and yet somehow you can't look away.
It's like a glorious train wreck making the most beautiful noise.
Yeah. But meanwhile, you're hiding.
Meanwhile, inside the darkness.
Let's see here. Let's move on to Jason Goodman, who asks, hi, guys. Is there even a question in
Oh,
this?
My. Oh, he's just
way down into it.
He's just swearing so much and calling us the nastiest names.
Whose body parts are these pictures of? Jason, seek help. I'm sorry. Here we go. Hi, guys. You can send the one-shot crew a thank you for another listener. After your appearance on Critical Success, I started listening through your backlogs. It's taken a while, but I'm finally caught up enough to have a question from recent material. So there we go. I just finished your White Ween review. Ah, remember White Ween?
White Ween.
It's a nice day for a White Ween. I can't wait for next year when we just do Black Dog games. All right. I just finished your White review of Noun the Adjective, now with 10% more fangs. I found your take on Malkavians interesting, especially in linking them with other infamously troublesome RPG options. My first vampire book was Requiem, but my first play opportunity was a Masquerade game. Taking Requiem's advice on not playing mental illness as a silly, slap-happy fun, but rather as a serious, life-altering and sometimes crippling condition, I created a Malkavian who had been a research psychologist in life, inspired somewhat by John Nash. I was hoping to play a character struggling with his newly corrupted mind, holding desperately to the vestiges of his sanity. Instead, I was surrounded by silly, slap-happy fun times with Johnny Knoxville and crew as the ST went right down the road you described. Anyway, my question is, do you have any advice on salvaging these often problematic RPG options? Many of them seem to have the potential to be used in a worthwhile manner. Except Kender. Fuck Kender.
Yep, that's the only option for them.
Just gotta do it.
You just have to.
Yeah, so let's see. Ways to kind of salvage crazies and Malkavians, and people who only ever read the second edition version of Chaotic Neutral.
Yeah, all of those options are mostly excuses for people to disrupt without being able to be called on it.
Yeah,
they want to be able to do whatever they want, and then if someone's like, dude, quit being a dick. He's like, I'm just in character.
Yeah. So it's most of the time you'll find it's a people problem and not a class problem. Malkavians don't force people to act like idiots.
No, want to be drawn to that because they're like, oh, this gives me an excuse.
Yeah. It's just like I was hearing someone on the internet arguing today, or on the radio arguing today, that people aren't drawn to troll online. Trolling is just a response to political correctness.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, because it doesn't lead to anything. It's people who want to troll get to troll.
Yeah.
That's all it is. And people who want to play jerks and disrupt the game are going to find a way. It's just sort of unfortunate that games give them the toolkit they need to have an excuse.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even if you don't have the chaotic neutral one, just being the rogue of the party and constantly pickpocketing your own party and doing stuff like that, there's always going to be some option that lets you do something stupid to your group or the setting, and it's just going to happen.
Yeah.
And so I think the ones like Malkavian, stuff like that, anything that has that built-in like a mental illness to it, most of those people are going to latch onto that and go, that means I just get to be as stupid as I want to be. And instead of playing it like an actual mental handicap, it is just, nah, I'm going to be a big goofball.
Yeah. And I think the controls are there. I mean, the Malkavian description isn't really monkey cheese slap happy. The Malkavian description is like, these guys are troubled. And they're a little bit on the random and chaotic side, but they can still be take jobs and they still have lives and what have you. And it just comes down to writing. When the writing's like, hey, these guys often suffer from mental illnesses, in order to play them, maybe give them a phobia or a manic disorder or something like that. Don't act like the Joker.
And then the problem is, of course, the picture for Malkavian is then some dumb monkey cheese.
Yeah, the picture for Malkavian is a dude hanging upside down with the now I have a machine gun ho 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 sweater on.
Yeah.
And he's doing the Joker face grab that Jared Leto has decided is a thing.
Yeah, he's doing his like big hair, stupid face thing, and you're like, okay, you are telling me one thing and showing me another.
Yeah, the art did not help the Malkavian cause. Like, you know, 4th edition got back to Chaotic Neutral being like, oh, these guys are relatively unpredictable, but not in an incredible way. 3rd edition was just fine with its alignment description. It was 2nd edition D&D that really kind of set that tone of, these guys might just jump off a bridge. If they're not happy with the side they're on, they'll just change sides. Whoopity-dee! Like, so that's the problem. It's writing. Once you have that writing down to the point where it doesn't describe crazy characters as wackadoodles, then it just comes down to fixing the players.
Yep.
And it's just stripping excuses away from people that were just looking for an excuse to be disruptive. You know, just like evil characters. It's fine to play evil characters, but if your only goal is to, I had a friend in high school named Steve who would only play evil characters, and it was because he was a broody, gothy guy whose habit was to sit there and go like, I could just murder any of you guys right now, and no one, because I'm evil. It's secret, though. None of you know I'm evil, and I have an amulet that makes me immune to detect evil. Anyway, I'm just going to go along with the party. I was like, all right, so you just want to be broody and punkish. That's all you really are looking for an excuse to do, but the game has already provided it to you by saying, oh, evil characters have ways to evade detection. So it's a player thing. It would not have fixed Steve to be at the time to be like, hey, man, don't play evil characters.
Yeah.
He would have been like, I'll just play a secret evil character. No one will know that I'm an evil character. My character listens to Sepultura.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically it. It's just the players.
Yeah. So, you know, sorry about that. Anyway, thanks, Pi. He put the number Pi. Maybe I shouldn't have said his name back
Pi.
In the beginning. Oh, well. So thanks, and it's not pi; it's the the number. It's thanks 3.14159265 3. I think it's 3. I've never been good at pi digits. All right, here we go. Hey guys, AmiYumi here with another question for you. I was recently given 3 extra jars of gefilte fish that I just cannot figure out how to make edible. I dislike the taste and the mouthfeel of traditional preparation, but I also abhor food waste, and given that it's sealed, I won't be able to use the excuse of, oh no, it's gone bad, anytime soon. Please tell me a way to make gefilte fish not gross.
Nope. It's fish. You're already on the outs with me.
Man, I know I have a kind of a history on the show of being the cook between the two of us, but gefilte fish is cat food suspended in light jello. It is. And I apologize. to all my Jewish friends, some of whom I know greatly enjoy as yellow fat chunks go dripping off their football-shaped piece of fish fat. It is the grossest thing in the world. And there's no way to prepare it that's not the traditional way, which is to slice it as if it counted as meat and cook it up as if it counted as food. I can't get into it. And so I spent a little time on this question. We got it quite a while ago, actually. And I did my best to kind of research online and see if anyone knew of a way to prepare gefilte fish. Mostly, it's people trying to find ways to make gefilte fish not taste like gefilte fish and failing.
Yep.
Like, if you scrape all the goop off it and fry the chunks that are left over, it's kind of like eating fried tuna, I guess.
I guess.
So, I apologize that gefilte fish defeats me. I feel like the best thing you could possibly do with it is just give it again to someone else.
Find someone that likes it. Give it to them.
That's what you do with Vegemite and Marmite. Any regional food product. Any kind of mite. Any mites you got, you could just give.
Some Mighty Mouse.
If you're covered in mites, give them to a friend.
That's what I always do.
Gross. On my new couch. All right. Also, I have far too many onions. My current plan is to make a huge amount of onion jam before they start sprouting, but if either of you have better ideas, it would be very much appreciated.
Rings.
Thanks, John. I would do an onion jam. The other thing that I have found in history is that French onion soup freezes really efficiently. So if you make yourself a big pot of French onion soup, you can freeze it. You end up with this cap of frozen onions on the top over some frozen broth. It's ugly, but it's very easy to cook back into tasty onion soup.
All right, here's what you're going to do with them. You're going to grind them all up. You're going to get little chunks of them. You're going to put them in a pan. You're going to fry those bits up. You're going to take those fried bits. You're going to put them in ice cream. You're going to eat it. It's going to be great. Trust me, I'm a chef. I'm a chefsman. I know about cookins.
He's not wrong. Adding a bit of crunch and salt to some ice cream would actually be a pretty tasty thing.
A little caramelized.
Yeah. Are we doing caramelized or fried?
Both. We're doing both.
Because I don't know if I'd go for a caramelized onion. The mouthfeel would be off.
Ooh, so much mouthfeel.
But one of the things my mom used to do when I was a little kid to trick me into eating onions because I thought I didn't like them was fry them till they were nearly unrecognizable amongst potatoes. And then I would just eat the crunchy chunks.
Oh, yeah. That's a great way to do that.
Yeah. So I feel like that would be good on ice cream because it would add a little bit of crunch and salt and kind of a savory twist to it.
Maybe on top, just a little drizzle of ketchup. Just a little ranch dressing on there.
I'm trying. And you're like, no, no.
No, no.
How to Make Ice Cream Palatable by John. Take an iceberg wet lettuce wedge, cover it in blue cheese and chips. Throw that away and order a pizza.
Yeah.
Eat ice cream while crying.
That's my Saturday night.
Your tears will flavor this ice cream. All right. So I would say onion soup, Amiyumi. That's something I make French onion soup from time to time. It freezes very, very well. Okay, next question to us from Neil. Hey, J&J. As an actual serious afterthought question, do you know of any good histories of role-playing games? Ideally running to the contemporary era of Savage Worlds, etc. So like a single book that's a history of role-playing games?
Nope.
I do not know. I mean, part of the reason that we decided to do this show is because people going on over a broad overview of the history of gaming is pretty rare. Normally people doing shows or interest pieces on role-playing games is like they zero in on one volume.
Oh, I mean, if you wanted some, what are some things of like histories of D&D, there are a billion of them.
Yes.
Like, just written from the point of view of the business side or just, like,
the idea of
Gygax. Or
talk about that satanic panic.
Oh, yeah. There's a ton of angles on D&D, mm-hmm. and you might occasionally get a, like, what is role-playing in the book?
Yeah.
But
nothing good.
Yeah,
because usually those are written from outsider perspectives. I mean, I've picked up and flipped through a few books of like, what happened in the 80s? What was Dungeons and Dragons all about? And they're always, first of all, they always seem to lean heavily on interviews with celebrities. And not that I want to keep dogpiling on the guy, but he's a big greasy meat face. And Vin Diesel's take on what D&D is just stupid. He's always like, I always play a half-drow assassin. My character in the movie Witch Hunter was inspired on my D&D character. Like, it's just, like, play something fun. Quit it with the grime. So I don't need the celebrity perspectives. I mean, granted, I'm always going to bow to whatever Colbert has to say.
Huh.
But there's just not a lot out there that's a history that's good to read. Instead, listen to our fine show, where we review games from any decade of gaming history.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
and give us money. So much money.
Yeah, our show is available for $29.95 at a Barnes & Noble near us. Just call us and meet us there with the money.
Just do it.
Then we'll let your sister go. All right, next question comes to us. Oh, same question. Slightly less serious. If you were to be engaged to write such a book, which of the more unusual, obscure books you've reviewed would you include? Obviously, D&D and White Wolf are a given, but do you think Ace Agents or Haven, City of Violence, represent or reflect major moments in gaming? Feel free to invent a silly name for me. Regards, Pork Lord.
Great. I would probably say Fantasy Wargaming, the highest level of all, be one that would go in there.
Yeah, definitely needs to be in there because it represents the first Grognard.
Well, yeah, it represents that first point where someone was like, oh, goodness, this won't do at all. Oh,
I could do this so much better. I could do this in my sleep. And then he proceeds to just fall down and poop himself.
Yeah. The people who are like, why, this game about elves and wizards isn't like real history at all. Great.
Now, here's my mini thoughts various upon the art's most feminine.
Good,
so,
thanks.
Yeah, Fantasy Wargaming needs to go in there because it's a weird, the first person who's like, I could do D&D better, and then he proceeds to just do D&D, but worse.
Yeah.
Bunnies and Burrows probably needs to go in there because it's an interesting breakaway. It's a lighthearted thing. I feel like I'd want Feng Shui in there for myself because it's the whole action movie genre was a great idea to tap into, and it kind of led to some people thinking, hey, we could play games faster. If we simplify the mechanics, we could push along and make games faster.
Yeah.
So I think those are all givens.
And, of course, Rifts.
Yeah, well, because our history would be Palladium.
There's no point where I can talk about RPGs and the history thereof without mentioning Palladium.
That's true. I mean, well, you could the part before, like, 1988 or so when he came on the market. But who wants to talk about that part?
No, then
anyway?
I'd just be talking about all the prophecies that pointed towards his coming.
Why, a pig has died here thrice.
Died here thrice.
Yeah, three pigs. It was three pigs. Each one of them died
right
there.
A pig has died here thrice.
Yes, a pig has died here thrice.
It died and came back to life and then died.
Different pig.
But it's not a pig.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'll revise that to pigs have thrice died here.
Thank you.
Now we don't know how many pigs.
Some pigs. Thrice.
No. So it could be any number of pigs now. It's a minimum of three. That's all we know.
Different singular pigs have thrice died here.
Well, now it's losing its old timiness.
Well, you got to be more specific with this.
Pigs most singular have thrice died here.
Very good, sir.
This means that a man shall rise in, Michigan, I think? He lives in Dearborn, so he's...
Yeah, that's Michigan.
So, a man shall rise in Michigan with what I have to assume is a brushy mustache.
From the land of the oven mitt, a man shall rise.
And he shall write these games most interesting.
Write these games three.
And then also several more.
And then after that, some more stuff.
So, okay, yeah, I also feel like the modern era would need to have some of the games that come out that have a build-your-own sort of sensibility to them, your GURPS, Fates, Savage Worlds, games that basically just give you the toolkit and then let you run wild with it.
Yeah, like Hulkamania.
Yeah, yeah, games that let the Hulkamania run wild over you.
Yeah.
Also, Street Fighter. I feel like that needs to be in the canon.
The cannon, yeah. To be fired directly out.
No, it's a great game. Remember, we gave it two thumbs up. We'd both play it.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah, I would play it.
So there we go. All right, let's move on. Next question comes to us from Cicero. Cicero says, Julius Caesar keeps flopping around Rome like a kingly peacock trying to juggle constitutional reform with his own unbridled ambitions. Jupiter Capitolino Atticus, the arrogance of the man. If constitutional reform was easy, surely I would have come up with a proposal that would please both radicals and conservatives. Now we have to suffer an old man with a wig who is the wife of an Eastern monarch. But that is not why I write to you, dearest of friends. No, Julius Caesar showed up at my villa with his entourage for dinner without invitation. It was a tense affair. Even as I served Trojan hot dogs, I had no idea of what he intended to discuss with me, as he avoided all talk of politics and war. As the night went on, it was clear that he had wandered in for an orgy. I had foolishly mentioned the erotic role-playing games you have there in Greece, and all I had with me was a copy of Fatal. I do not need to say what a disaster it was. Atticus, please tell me of better erotic role-playing systems. It is the only thing that can save the Republic, your dearest friend, Cicero. Was that first part a Trump thing? Like a man with a wig who's got an Eastern monarch for a wife?
That's just, you know, Caesar.
Okay. Well, all right. So let's move on here. Erotic roleplay systems.
Yeah. Nope.
Monster Hearts. It's Monster Hearts.
It's not even really erotic. It just has sex in it.
Yeah, but it can be played in an erotic fashion without being a total travesty. And I think that's the closest you're going to get from us. We don't have the one-shot guy's experience with getting that deep into smooching in our games. I mean, not that I'm against it. It's just that it's never really come up.
I'm against smooching in general. I hate it.
John, of course, anti-smooch.
The anti-smooch, that's me.
Yeah, he was one of the original authors behind the Holly Smooch Tariff.
Quit smooching that Holly.
That's right, folks. This is going to be the only comedic reference to the Holly Smooch Tariff you're going to read today, unless you're reading a lot of old Dave Barry.
Dave, your cousin Marvin Barry.
You know how you wanted a bunch of dad jokes to publish in a Florida newspaper?
Well, get a load of this.
None of these jokes. No Holly Smoot Tariff jokes, no Dave Barry jokes. None of this is landing for anyone but us.
Don't care.
This little section of the podcast is personal.
This is just for us. This is the just for men section.
This is our erotic role playing.
Well, you know, I'm halfway there right now, so.
Yeah, I'm about half-mast. If we can work in a joke about kissing that makes fun of the teapot dome scandal, then it'll bring me on home.
Talk me over the edge.
Man. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm going to throw Monster Hearts into the ring. It's the only one I've read that I felt like really did a good job. And I've read a full-on fat fetish RPG.
Yep.
Basically, it didn't work.
Yeah, no. None of them do.
No. So, I don't know. I'm going to say Monster Hearts, but otherwise, we are going to move on. Thank you for your great question. I still think that might be a Trump thing. This question comes to us from Fuzzy Gundam. Okay, I guess I'll repost my old question since you guys missed it for months. Not the one about Obama, since that's not funny anymore. Oh, don't worry, he'll come around again. What do you think about RPGs where the character has multiple different modes of play, such as when they have a past life as a dragon, or they climb into a 50-meter mecha, or they have to lead an army? Are these a good idea, or are they too much to manage? Does it work best if each mode has its own character sheet and mechanics, all separate from each other, or should the mode build off the normal human character, like you wear your army like a stat-like buff set, or just let do the same thing, but bigger?
I would say it depends on the system.
Yeah, I mean,
sometimes, like, if you want to do the whole, you have a different mode, I would also say I want it to be in a game where everyone does that as mm-hmm. well, because you don't want it to be like, all right, we're all just soldiers, and then one of us gets to be in a giant mech, because then that's just garbage.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to run into some potential issues with it that are not too difficult to solve. We've only ever seen a couple of pitfall versions of this on the show. Fireborn famously lets you play as your dragon past life, but it's not interesting. Like, your dragon has static stats and is a big goddamn dragon, so it's just an excuse for the players to go like, run around, do whatever, okay, back to your character that matters.
Yeah, I like for that, if you're going to do something along those lines, the Dragonborn thing, or if you've got a weird transformation sequence and you turn into something else, I like having a separate sheet for that,
mm-hmm.
personally.
That. Yeah. I mean, for like robot fight games, that's definitely a good idea to have a whole separate sheet to control it.
Well, but even if you're doing, say, like a magical girl game, after you do your transformation sequence, you're like, oh, yeah, no, you totally have an entirely different sheet now.
Well, I guess, but it could be like your character is always a little clumsy, but even when she's a magical girl, that's the part that shines through. Just add 5 to her strength, but don't add anything to her dexterity. So, I mean, it works in a lot of ways. I think the only problem is when one of your sets of mechanics is either extraneous to the storyline or doesn't have any way to grow.
Mm.
So I feel like those things can potentially be problems for you. Like, imagine if you were playing the EverQuest D20 license RPG, and you could play as your character in the game and your character out of the game.
So Sword Art Online?
Yeah, so Sword Art Online. I've tried watching that anime like 3 times, and it is interminably boring. Also, it suffers.
Yeah, well, you know, it is a true representation of trying to watch someone play an MMO.
There's that for sure. Also, it doesn't make any fucking sense as an MMO. Like, are all the people they're meeting just playing that in the game? Like, I decided to be a shopkeeper.
Oh yeah, it's people playing Galaxies.
Yeah, it's exactly like people playing Galaxies. I'm dancing in this cantina. Give me tips, please.
Yeah, there's some guy who's like, hi, I'm the local mayor. I rolled up mayor as a class.
I've been AFK for 45 days, but I'm gaining XP.
I'm the boy mayor of Sword Art Online.
But no, I mean, that's the problem with Sword Art Online is, number one, there's a bunch of extraneous dolts in every town that are like, I'm playing this game. What are you? A pig man? I have a pig? Here's my pig. Do you go out in dungeons? No, I pretty much hang out in town with this pig.
Pretty much just me and the pig hang out.
It's just pig business.
I mean, that's basically what my life is. I just hang out with a pig all the time.
Call me.
Hey.
Whoa. Call me Pork Lord. But anyway, it also suffers from the anime. This is a modern anime problem, I feel like. Like, most of the anime that has this issue is in the last 15 to 20 years is there are 5,000 goddamn characters, and they're introduced 10 at a time every episode. They're just like, here's 50 more samey-looking guys. They're really important in the manga, probably, but good Lord knows you're never going to keep track of who all these dipshits are.
Yeah. No, I can't deal with that. Like, it's fine if you want to introduce a new villain every week. Sure, go for it. But when you're like, here's an entire new squad of dudes every single time, I'm like, man, I don't care.
Yeah, that's the my favorite thing to do to people is have them watch the first episode of Bleach and then like the 75th, where you're like, here, watch this show. Oh, this is kind of charming. There's this big dude and he's like a ghost hating man, and there's like a girl who's dead and she hangs around with him.
This guy and he's not afraid of no ghosts.
Yeah, he like fights ghosts that have chains coming out of them. I could get into this. It's like a Samurai X-Files. There's like a ghost who hangs around with them. I could get into this. Then you go to episode 75, 80 guys with different haircuts in the same uniform are all yelling about justice. They appear to be doing it in some kind of endless school. What? It's clear they're not on Earth. What is happening?
Anime.
So that's my answer about role-playing games.
Bleach sucks. That was my answer about should people... I like the idea of being able to build your own modular robot or create your own monster form that your character turns into. I feel like there's a range for whether or not you need to make it another character sheet. Are you playing Guyver? Then you probably don't need another character sheet because your character is just a big amplified version of yourself. Are you playing Pacific Rim? Then yeah, clearly the Gypsy Danger is not an okay representation of the guys piloting it, so it probably needs a new character sheet.
Yeah.
And it's just it's something that you can make your decision on fairly simply.
Yep.
All right, moving on. Next question comes to us from Mirdradek. As a fan of Dark Crystal, how do you feel about America electing its first all-Skeksis executive branch? Man, you got to be careful. They got crystal bats everywhere. You say shit like that, there's going to be Garthim at your door in a day.
Man, they are going to be scuttling all over the place.
Those things are terrifying.
That is the greatest thing in that movie, by the way.
The Garthim?
Hell yeah.
Those Garthim are legitimately... The only thing scarier than the Garthim in that movie is the scene where the pod guy is having his memory sucked out of his eyes.
The being drained of his life force.
Yeah, by, like, a big light being shined on him, and he's all like, oh, that is messed up. Man, I showed that movie to 12-year-olds who had never heard of it the other day, and they were like, the fuck is this? How is this...
How are you allowed to watch this?
None of this is CGI. It didn't end in a pop cover of a 60s song. What? Everything's so slow.
It's like showing someone old episodes of Pee-wee's Playhouse, and they're like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. Everyone. But the thing is, they all loved it. They're all like, I have to understand the mystery of how a movie like this could come to be made.
I need to know. There has to be a reason.
This can't have happened on accident. And you say no one was fired for this? No one on this cast was replaced by Selena Gomez?
Oh, man, I wish.
All right, alone then.
And then Fizzgig is Selena Gomez.
Anyway, I'm not especially enamored of our current all-Skeksis executive branch.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too political on this show, but I'm all kinds of grumpy about it, so there you go.
There you are.
Is that pretty much where you are, too?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, all right. In the past, you've been a bit dismissive of alignment systems in games. While I can understand your objections, I feel that D&D's alignment system really came into its own in Planescape by shaping the various factions and outer planes that made Planescape so interesting. In particular, the distinction between lawful evil and chaotic evil ended up giving us something as cool as the Blood War. Do you think alignment systems can be helpful for world building, or do you think there's still too much of a risk that it will just turn into the GM yelling at people for acting out of alignment? Well, let's get this out of the way. The things about the alignment system that worked so well for Planescape had nothing to do with the players' alignments.
Yeah.
It was more like, these demons have interesting alignments, and it causes cool shit like the Blood War. And
well, it was mostly just a jumping off point. Someone looked at the alignment and was like, okay, how do we represent lawful neutral as an entire plane of existence?
Yeah, and that's awesome. It had nothing to do with whether the players were lawful neutral. It had everything to do with, let's take this one little element and expand it and find a story in it.
Yeah.
And that was a great idea.
Because, I mean, even just looking at something like, let's say, chaotic neutral. The plane for chaotic neutral...
Yeah, Limbo.
...is nuts and...
Full of frogs and...
Like,
and
weird frogs and gith and shenanigans.
Yeah, it's got Githzerai and Slad.
And it has nothing to do with being a monkey cheese ninja that jumps off of a bridge. It has nothing to do with the actual alignment of a person so much as it does what that alignment might evoke for an idea for a place.
Yeah, much like how the layers of hell, the 666 layers of Tartarus or whatever it is cool because it's like, all right, lawful evil is ordered. And then, meanwhile, chaotic evil gets the pit, which is just a giant hell zone.
Yeah, you just get the abyss, and it's, what is that? Oh, it's an infinite number of random bullshit and no one knows.
Yeah, where lawful evil is like, oh, everyone knows exactly how many layers there are. There's a rule about that.
Yeah, you know how many layers there are, you know how many of each type of demon there are, and when you go to a specific layer, you can see the guy who runs that layer.
Yeah, and lawful neutral gave us the coolest thing ever. An entire plane made out of gears full of dumb-looking robots.
It's so good. I fucking love Mechanus so much.
Everything about Modrons is the best. My favorite thing about Modrons in particular is that because they don't need to take orders from Modrons that are more than two ranks above them, they don't know what those are. So if you see one of those little square guys, your Nordrums and what have you, and then they see a Pentadrone, which looks like a starfish on feet, they're like, what is that thing? That's crazy, man. How does that happen? Huh. No, wait, those are within two ranks of each other. It would have to be the triangle one that wouldn't know what the fuck the starfish on feet is.
Yeah, you'd just be like, huh, weird.
The best part about that is that if someone kills that starfish on feet, then that's how they progress. That's how they grow up as Modrons, is they progress up the ranks. When one of them dies above them, they change forms to replace it. So, anyway, that's... Mechanus is hilarious. It's a great idea of what happens if everyone only follows rules and nothing else.
Yeah, I think... Alignment systems tend to be mostly that problem you mentioned of people being like, hey, man, you're not acting like your alignment says.
Yeah.
Unless you do something super interesting with it, alignment systems are mostly there to make it so that your life is harder.
Yeah. I like it when they're there as suggestions, like not alignment systems exactly, but I like the question systems where my favorite is ask your own questions and answer them. Ask three questions about your character and list your answers, because that otherwise... Man,
my favorite is Immortal, where you have a 37 questionnaire that you have to fill out.
I was just trying to think of a way to describe Immortal without having to pull the book out and describe, and I already mailed it to our contest winner.
Yeah. So without being able to go like, describe the beginning of the universe.
In detail. If you could create an ice cream flavor from the colors of music.
Would it be onion?
Yeah. So, well, it would certainly have fried little onion bits.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
Yeah. But if you say, oh, what are some things that are important to your character? Why are they important to your character? There, that's your alignment. Go. It's got nothing to do with enforcement and everything to do with helping the person build a bridge to understanding how their character should act.
Yeah.
And it should never be spoken of again after character creation.
Mm-hmm.
If you're like, Jay, look at your sheet. Does that make sense for the questions you asked yourself at the beginning of the game? It does? All right, have fun.
Yeah, I mean, I almost get it in the... like the more cocky version of alignments for D&D, where it's like...
I like the less cocky version.
Where you're in a universe where law and chaos are actual tangible things.
Oh yeah, that's fun. That's a fun way to expand the alignment system.
Yeah, at that point you go, oh, it's not so much that I'm good because I like doing nice things, it's... I'm good because I am infused with the actual for real's essence of goodness.
Yes, and I can tell you to within a point how good I am.
Yeah.
I'm 418 points good.
I was rated at 9.8 good. Man, I'm near mint.
In a world, I would love to play in a D&D world where your alignment is straight up just your credit score.
I've got a 780 score on good.
Holy shit, man. You've been so careful with your goodness over your life.
Well, the trick is to get a little evil and then pay it off.
Once a month, I kill a peasant, and then before the end of the month, I send his wife a bouquet. All right, let's see here. Let's move on to a question from Trilobite. Trilobite, who says, "G'day, mates, at Bloody System Mastery. It's Bruce here. I've been found income rustling up some vendor at Nala Beerongs out here in the Outback Billabongs." Outback Billabongs? Oh, wait, that is a thing, right? They're like swamps or something. "And me and the Sheila have come up with some bloody afterthought questions for you blokes to have a bonza look at. We'll drive down to Melbourne in our utes," I assume that's SUVs, "blow on some didgeridoos and have a few tinnies of Fosters from the from the Tucker bag in our Ugg boots as thanks." They have bags in their boots? Australians are weird. All right, so John, first question from a very Australian man.
Yes.
"Would you rather have arms twice as long as the current length or legs twice the current length?"
Legs twice. Because then I'd be like a weird, cool mutant. Arms twice the length, I'd just sort of be like an ape.
Okay, I'm going to go with arms twice the length. And the reason is because I don't want to have to go around installing a bunch of new doors.
But then if I have legs twice the length, I mean, I'm already tall, which means I would just be awesome tall.
You'd be like 11 feet tall and you wouldn't fit indoors.
It would be cool, though.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that'd be, you'd be very fast.
Oh, yeah, man. I would dunk so hard on folks.
Yeah, you really would. I mean, meanwhile, with arms twice length, I would be very good at brachiating. I could just swing all nimbly-pimbly from tree to tree.
Yeah, man. And if you get, like, tired while you're walking around, you just use your arms as part of your walking.
That's true. They would straight up touch the ground most of the time. I would look apey. But on the other hand, I'd still fit into all of my existing clothes. I mean, granted, all my short sleeve shirts would be tank tops and all my long sleeve shirts would be short sleeve. But I would fit into all my clothes, and I'd be able to pull off all kinds of fun shit with my long arms. I would also be dunking on people constantly without all the hassle of having to jump.
Nah, man. Double arm length doesn't let you dunk on people. You still can't get to that rim.
I'm pretty close. And with double arm length, I'm pretty sure I'm there. Also, I'd be a really good swimmer.
Okay, so that's what's actually going to happen here. Me with double leg length, you with double arm length, 1v1 b-ball match.
B-ball me, bro.
That's what's happening.
Are we playing? Are we straight up playing
one-on-one?
Street rules, playing, like,
1v1 b-ball.
Well, I'm going to hack you down at the legs.
Well, I'm going to kick you in your head.
All right, so we have different answers, and I'm holding to mine. So
yeah.
You're not talking me into long legs. That just sounds gross. Man, that means no one can reach my junk.
Man.
I like it when people can reach my junk. That's why I want long arms, so I can reach more junk.
Yeah, but if you had long arms, it would be so hard to reach your own junk. Where your elbow is, you'd be like, oh, God.
Man, everyone can reach my junk.
I got it in a jar.
All right. Let's move on to the second question. Now, here we go. Can I do my terrible Australian accent again? Let's find out.
Nope.
Recently... I've been going through a pretentious arty phase and have been rewatching a lot of foreign language films like Old Boy and The Raid. What are some non-English movies that you have thoroughly enjoyed? So, he's going through a pretentious arty film and watching Old Boy and The Raid. So
that's not real. Well, I guess for Australians, that's pretentious.
Those
and arty.
Are martial arts movies.
Yeah. That's pretentious for Australians.
Yeah. Real pretentious arty movies from other countries are like, oh, my goat died. It is so difficult here in Uzbekistan. I will go on a lengthy period of lesbian self-discovery.
Excellent. Let's see. What have I seen recently?
That's a foreign movie to us. I was going to say, for me, it's Young Einstein.
I mean, for me, it's still The Raid.
The Raid is so good. So, let's see. Art films from other countries, or just non-English films that we like. I'm a huge fan of Delicatessen.
Huh.
Have you ever seen it?
No.
Oh, it's a fantastic movie. You should totally check it. It's a French film.
Oh, I know. Back when I worked in the video section of a library, that was one that got checked out all the time by students. Because they had to watch it for classes.
It has
stuff.
Some unbelievably well-staged scenes. Just very good, not quite stunt work, but like rhythm work between a variety of players all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. I would heartily endorse checking it out anytime.
Good.
Yeah.
For me, it's mostly just Japanese horror films.
Yeah.
Or Spanish horror films.
Yeah, Guillermo del Toro making his The Devil's, pancreas or whatever.
Yeah, The Devil's Pancreas.
Don't
good
put
job,
it past
you
him.
Did it.
That's what, because this is how Guillermo del Toro works. He grabs the rights to everything, and then he makes Spanish language horror movies.
Yeah.
He just sits there like a broody hen on top of all the movies he has the rights to make, but won't, and makes more Spanish language horror movies.
It's how he gets his power.
It's how he derives it.
He takes the rights to Mountains of Madness, puts it on a shelf, and then grabs it and occasionally gains power from it.
Yeah, he's like, ooh, no one's ever going to make you. I can tell you why he's not.
He's like Brainiac with that shit. He's just putting them all in jars.
I think the reason he wasn't making At the Mountains of Madness is because it had Tom Cruise attached to it, and he was like, no, that's going to suck.
No, that's okay. I don't need a scene where he runs away from a Shoggoth on a motorcycle.
Yeah, I'm all set. Thank you. I mean, he could get Tom Hanks in there, and then he has to add a peeing scene.
Oh, yeah, he pees on a Shoggoth.
Check it out, folks. It's weird. Tom Hanks pees in every movie.
Every movie.
Every goddamn movie. Also, he pees every day. What a weirdo.
What a strange guy.
I know. Who pees every day?
Every day? That's just decadent.
That's just un-American. And that's the answer to our question. Tom Hanks is un-American, so I enjoy various Tom Hanks movies.
There you go.
All right. Let's see. What else do we have here? I think that's it from him. Moving on to one last question for today, and this one comes to us from Aaron Weisbrook, which, look, I'm doing your name right now.
Oh, the Hefeweisen?
Yeah, and this is a 4 questions, so we'll do these shotgun style. You ready? I'm just going to ask you quick.
Great.
What's the largest group you've ever played a tabletop game with?
For a role-playing game, like 10 people.
12 for me, and it was a D&D game. We were doing Return to the Undermountain. It was awful, and we ended up watching a terrible porno as a group of 12 boys instead.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a fun time, let me tell you.
Man, we played Rifts with like 12 people, probably I think it was closer to 10, and 4 of them just didn't give a fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were off on like their own little table,
yeah,
just dicking around.
Just at the kids' table. Yeah, well, I gave up immediately on playing my shitty druid and sat down with 12 other kids and watched a porn movie called Cherry Cheerleaders.
Excellent.
Which was horrible. And I believe the VHS tape is still being passed around at my local high school. It's,
well, yeah, you have to pass it on or else you die in 7 days.
That's not even how The Ring works. You still die if you see it.
No, you have to make someone else watch it, and then you don't.
I thought everyone died. I thought every single person who saw the video died.
Watch the movie.
I did. I only remember it for the horse suicide and the nails breaking out.
I only remember horse suicide.
I hate horses, man.
I just cheered and then didn't stop cheering until the credits.
I went to Mr. Horse Death, my favorite website. Tells me when in a movie a horse dies. And then I just zoomed forward to that part of the movie and was like, ha, stupid horse.
Dumbass
cars
horse.
Have replaced you. You should drown by running off a boat. All right. Okay, next one. I'm sorry. This was supposed to be shotgun style. We're just doing this fast. John's in-depth knowledge of sliders is well established.
Sliders.
But what's Jeff's equivalent? What show, book, or other media do you have an encyclopedic understanding of that John couldn't care less about? Well, that would be the Star Wars Expanded Universe.
That is true.
Yep. I read all those fucking things until I was about 18 and then gave up on it.
Every time you give me a name of some idiot from the Expanded Universe, I'm like, why does this exist?
Man, I want to do that for days. Hey, John, Kip Duron.
Great. Sure.
A race of tiny seal-looking people with sharp teeth called the Nogri.
Man, you could literally just say some syllables and then tell me it was a race, and I'd be like, yeah, sure, why not?
Dude, there's a new Imperial guy named Admiral Poopdeck.
See, now that's too funny.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It has to be random syllables. You'd be like, now, if you're like, oh, there's a Garbaxon, and he's Admiral Fardak, I'd be like, yeah, sure, that sounds right.
That does sound right. I mean, granted, when I tried to convince you, and I'm still working, well, no, we figured it, we're doing it now. We're just working on how. When I read you a dialogue from Shadows of the Empire, or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And it was just Prince Shizor talking to the Emperor, and they just talk at each other for like 5 pages. Just, yes, Shizor, it would be nice if that was true. But as everyone knows, you do not tell the truth because you are an evil gangster who is evil.
And one of us always tells the truth, and one of us always lies. Now, who will you ask, and what question will it be?
You feel it, don't you?
Yeah, that's it. I know a lot about the expanded universe of Star Wars and the history of Star Wars and all the bloopers and every. I know every stupid piece of media that came out before the modern kind of Star Wars renaissance. You want someone to talk to about the droids cartoon show from the 80s or the time that C-3PO tap danced on the Muppet Show? I'm your guy.
Good.
That's my shit. That's my jam. And John knows nothing about it and couldn't care about it in the slightest, which is what's going to make that podcast phenomenal. It's going to be the total enthusiast or the former enthusiast in me. And then John is like, what is this?
What is this stupid garbage?
Who is Mara Jade and why should I care?
I don't.
Two to go. I dabble in amateur game writing, and I find myself always in pursuit of the right balance between technical writing that expresses information in a useful way and writing that's actually nice to read so that your RPG book isn't like reading the owner's manual to a 1992 Honda Accord. Ah, come on now. I love reading the owner's manuals to 1992 Honda Accords. That shit is like fine wine. What are some RPG books that hit the balance nicely?
Anytime that the book separates them, I think is the big thing. Don't have natural language for the whole book like you're doing, say, a first edition or second edition Exalted. And don't have it just be an owner's manual like you are doing, like, Phoenix Command or something
Prime
like that.
Prime Directive.
Where it's just, here, let me tell you all of the numbers for everything.
Yeah. So some books that have struck the balance especially well. I like some of the White Wolf books, not all of them.
Well, I mean, Sky Realms of Jorun, obviously.
Yeah.
Deeply evocative. And then when it wants to get into that crunch, it's crystal clear what you're supposed to do.
I'm enjoying this very much. I mean, I hate to just keep recommending the same games over and over again, but that's something that Feng Shui excels at. I mean, it's got an evocative storyline. It's got evocatively written character designs. It's very efficient at giving you what the rules are because the rules are just simply on the sidebars. You don't really need to involve yourself with them while you're reading about how cool the character is.
Yeah. I mean, the big problem with stuff we see is when they start getting into terminology of the game in describing things before you even know what that terminology is.
Well, that's just a future. That's complaints from the future with John.
That's immortal.
Yeah, well, okay, but it's our new book too.
Yeah, it's so. It's everything. When it's just like, hey, let me start describing to you this world in the terms that you don't know yet.
Hey, man, if a Tauthier wants to point a Condridge at me,
exactly. Man, that's what I'm saying. Anytime you have one of those games that just decides they want to give you a lexicon before you know the lexicon, that game.
I'm gonna kive that Githeran right in the bone box. You savvy Burke?
I am a savvy Burke.
I switched. I went from Sky Realms to Planescape.
I know. I saw that.
All right. And last question. Would you rather have the power to never forget a person's name whom you've met once before, or the power of perfectly clean deuces? Nothing but net, no wiping.
Oh, clean deuces every time. I can always ask what someone's name is if I need to, but man, no wiping? That saves you so much time. Are you kidding me?
I'm going to take the first option. I don't mind wiping my butt. It's not hard, and it's going to be super easy with my double long arms.
However, with me having to probably just squat high above a toilet.
Yeah, that's going to be a real problem for you.
If it's nothing but net and no wiping, I got no problems.
Yeah, you don't even need to squat. You can just poop in the vicinity of a toilet. And it you'll just, never whoop! Miss. That's true. But I am the worst with names.
That is true. You are awful with names.
I cannot remember names in the slightest. I'm so worried about making first impressions on people that I don't bother to learn their name when they tell me what it is, and then I've got to ruin the first impression about 5 minutes later. I have about, I'd say about 50 to 75% of the people in my life are like, hey, guy.
Hey, man.
Like 3/4 of the people at my work, I'm like, oh, that's the accountant guy.
Hey. Hey, how's numbers?
Hey, buddy.
Hey, dude.
And I'm useless to play role-playing games with because I don't remember anything.
No. As soon as someone gives you a name, it's like, hey, we're in a town. It's called this. This is the guy you're meeting. You're like, I'm not going to remember that in
something,
20 seconds.
I drive all my DMs nuts because I have to be like, hey, does my character know this? Because I fucking don't.
I forgot to write this down. My character would know this just for the love of God.
Don't punish me because I have no memory. It's a disability.
Yeah.
So I would take the ability to remember people's first names because at least then I would remember something in my life.
Yeah. And I would take perfect deuces because then at least I'd be good at something in my life.
There we have it.
There
so,
we go.
So you have double legs and perfect poops, and I've got double arms and I never forget a name.
Good old double legs, perfect poops.
Great. Well, let's
coming
make
to you in a Patreon bonus episode soon.
Yeah, double legs, perfect poops is a great new character for some kind of game.
We'll find it.
I don't know what, but we'll figure it out. Folks, if you enjoyed what you're listening to, please let us know. You can contact System Mastery at systemmastery@gmail.com or find us at systemmasterypodcast.com, System Mastery on Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, or Reddit. All those places are great places to stop by. If you want to ask us questions for us to answer on the Afterthought, the best place to do that nowadays is the Reddit Afterthought Questions thread. You can find it right there on r/systemmastery. You're also welcome to email us, tweet at us, whatever. You can send us questions however the heck you want. Check us out on our System Mastery podcast, where we review old role-playing games once every 2 weeks until we go insane, which is coming soon, let me tell you.
Real quick now.
Oh, boy. Or check our Movie Mastery out, where we review old movies or movies that are in theaters, depending on which week it is. We did an In Theaters Now this week. That'll be out in a couple of days, and it is a fun one.
Oh, man, it is one of my favorites.
It was a good time. All right, so otherwise, thank you so much for listening. Support us and keep on listening, and you have a great week.